Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're immersing ourselves in a book that genuinely changed the course of things, Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. And maybe the best way to start is with the question this book forces us to ask, again and again, really. How often do our big technological fixes end up causing even bigger problems? You know, back in the 50s, DDT seemed like a miracle cure.
It really did. And that tension you mentioned, that's precisely why Silent Spring from way back in 1962 still feels so current. It essentially kicked off the modern environmental movement, certainly in the West. Carson's focus on these invisible, persistent chemicals like DDT. It's the same kind of conversation we're having now about things like PFAS, microplastics, even climate change, in a way. So yeah, it's history, but it's also like a handbook for thinking critically about new tech.
Right. So our mission today is clear. Let's unpack how Carson brought together the science, her understanding of ecology, and frankly, sheer moral courage to challenge some really powerful forces.
Definitely. And to get why the book hits so hard, you kind of have to know a bit about Rachel Carson herself. She was born in 1907, trained as a marine biologist, and importantly, she worked for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for over 15 years, eventually became editor-in-chief there. So she had this, like, inside track on government research, stuff the public wasn't seeing.
That's fascinating. But she wasn't just a scientist or an editor, was she? She was already a famous writer.
Oh, absolutely. A huge point. Before Silent Spring, she was a best-selling author.
Yeah.
I mean, The Sea Around Us was on the New York Times list for... what was it, 86 weeks?
Wow, 86 weeks?
Yeah. So she had this incredible platform, the scientific chops, and this ability to write beautifully, accessibly. People trusted her.
So how did that unique position shape her approach in Silent Spring?
Well, what's interesting is she didn't actually conduct new primary research for this book. Her genius was in synthesis. She took hundreds of existing studies from toxicology, ecology, even cancer research, fields that didn't usually talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And she connected the dots. She saw the bigger picture that everyone else was missing, partly because the data was so siloed.
And we have to mention the personal side, too. The immense courage it took. She was fighting breast cancer while writing this, wasn't she?
Yes. She was diagnosed in the late 50s, right around when she started digging deep into pesticides.
Yeah.
And tragically, she died just 2 years after Silent Spring was published.
It just adds this layer of urgency, knowing she knew her time was limited while writing this warning.
Absolutely. It gives the whole project this profound weight.
Okay, so she had this inside knowledge, this incredible writing skill. What was the core argument she put forward that just, you know, blew everything up?
The main point, the real bombshell, was this urgent warning against just spraying synthetic chemical pesticides everywhere without thinking. She didn't even call them just pesticides. Sometimes she used the term biocides. Life killers.
Biocides. That's chilling.
It is. She was fundamentally questioning this idea that we could just dump these powerful new chemicals into the environment without understanding the long-term effects, the real cost. You know, the whole post-war attitude was very much technology equals progress, always. Carson challenged that head on. She argued this chemical warfare wasn't just killing pests, it was damaging the whole web of life. And that includes us, humans.
And the title itself, Silent Spring, comes from that famous opening chapter, right? The Fable for Tomorrow.
Exactly. She paints this picture of an idyllic American town where one spring the birds stop singing, there are no bees, the fish die off, all because of these pervasive chemicals.
It's such a powerful image. Instead of just stats and chemicals, it's the absence of birdsong.
It makes the threat feel immediate, visceral. It was a stark warning about where this path could lead.
Mm.
And it all comes back to her central ecological insight. Everything is connected. You poison one part, the poison spreads. It affects the whole system. That holistic view is pretty radical then.
So the industry line was basically, these chemicals do their job and then they disappear. Carson showed that wasn't true at all. How did she trace what she called the trail of poison?
Yeah, she was basically using systems thinking before it was really called that. She showed these persistent pesticides, they don't just vanish, they wash into rivers and groundwater, she called these, rivers of death. And they get into the soil too, killing off earthworms, microbes, the things that actually make soil healthy and alive. She described it as disrupting the realms of the soil. So using these chemicals wasn't sustainable. It was like mining the soil's life.
And the example that really seemed to capture the public imagination was about the American robin, wasn't it? The bioaccumulation idea. Can you walk us through that? Because it's so clear.
Right. The robin story was devastatingly effective. It worked like this. DDT gets sprayed on elm trees. maybe miles away, to kill bark beetles.
Okay.
The leaves fall, coated in DDT. Earthworms eat the leaves, and the DDT builds up in their bodies. It concentrates.
Right.
Then the robins come along and eat the earthworms. Because the toxin is concentrated, the robins get a much higher dose than was ever sprayed initially, enough to kill them, or at least prevent them from reproducing, mass die-offs.
And it wasn't just robins. She talked about birds of prey, too, like bald eagles. But the effect was different there.
Yeah, that was another crucial piece. With eagles and ospreys, it wasn't always outright death. A breakdown product of DDT called DDE interfered with their calcium metabolism.
Okay, what did that do?
It meant they couldn't form strong eggshells.
Mm-hmm.
The shells became super thin, brittle. They'd literally break in the nest when the parents tried to incubate them. So, reproductive failure. A silent kind of extinction happening right at the top of the food chain where these toxins were most concentrated.
Wow. So this failure to see the whole system leads to you her next big point, right? That this whole chemical approach was ultimately futile.
Exactly. That was a major theme. This wasn't a war against nature that humans could actually win in the long run.
And we actually make it worse over time. She talked about the pesticide treadmill.
Yes, the treadmill concept.
Yeah.
Pests evolve resistance and they do it fast. So you need stronger poisons or more of them just to get the same effect. Nature adapts, you get superbugs, and you're stuck on this escalating treadmill.
Uh-huh.
And it gets worse. By killing off the pest's natural enemies, the predators, the parasites, the pesticides can actually cause the original pest population to explode later on, or cause new pests to emerge. She called these secondary outbreaks the rumblings of an avalanche.
An avalanche.
She was especially critical of these massive, indiscriminate aerial spraying programs, like the ones for fire ants or gypsy moths, just blanketing huge areas with poison from the sky. Ineffective, destructive, and ultimately just poisoning everything.
So she's laying out the science, the ecological disaster. But this was also a massive political fight, wasn't it? She was taking on huge chemical companies.
Oh, absolutely. Companies like DuPont, Monsanto.
Yeah.
They mounted a huge campaign against her. Tried to discredit her personally, paint her as hysterical, unscientific. A lone woman against this massive industrial and governmental consensus.
Which makes her focus on the right to know so important.
Exactly, because this wasn't just about birds and bugs. She connected it directly to human health, the long-term effects of chronic low-dose exposure, things like cancer, liver disease.
Right, she challenged that old idea, the dose makes the poison.
She did. She argued that with chemicals that build up in your body fat over time, that cumulative dose really matters, even if each individual exposure is tiny.
And the political point was?
Her most powerful political argument was about democracy, really. She showed how corporations were influencing policy, suppressing research that hurt their profits. And she argued that forcing citizens to be exposed to these risks without their informed consent, without a real say, well, that's fundamentally undemocratic. She drew a parallel to taxation without representation.
Wow, taxation without representation for environmental risk. That's powerful framing.
It really was.
You know, the book is just full of lines that stick with you. That blend of science and almost poetic language. Let's share a few key quotes.
Yeah, definitely. The one that sums up the core ecological idea is just perfect. In nature, nothing exists alone. Simple, elegant, profound. You can't isolate actions from consequences.
I love that one. And then there's her challenge to human arrogance.
Oh, yeah. The control of nature is a phrase conceived in arrogance, born of the Neanderthal age of biology and philosophy. That just cuts right through the hubris of the time.
It really does. And the one about the scope of the problem.
This one really lands the urgency. For the first time in the history of the world, every human being is now subjected to contact with dangerous chemicals from the moment of conception until death. It underlines that this is universal. Nobody escapes.
Sobering stuff. But Carson didn't just leave it at critique, did she? The last chapter is The Other Road. She offered alternatives. What are the takeaways for us today?
Well, on a policy level, her work is the bedrock for what we now call the precautionary principle.
Okay, the precautionary principle. Break that down. What does that mean practically?
It basically means shifting the burden of proof. Instead of the public having to prove a chemical is harmful after it's already out there causing damage.
Which is what used to happen.
Right. The principle says the onus should be on the manufacturer, the industry, to prove their new product or technology is safe before it gets widely adopted, whether that's a pesticide, a new plastic, maybe even certain AI applications today. Prove safety first. It's a vital protection.
That makes sense. Demand the long-term testing up front.
Exactly. And that lesson about unintended consequences, that's systems thinking. It's crucial for anyone working in any complex field today. Quick fixes often backfire if you ignore the bigger picture, the underlying relationships. Think about geoengineering, for example.
Mm-hmm. And on a more personal level.
Well, Carson really empowers us as individuals. Her work informs why someone might choose organic food or avoid spraying pesticides all over their lawn or look for companies that are genuinely trying to be environmentally responsible. It connects the big environmental issues to choices you can make.
Yeah, it brings it home. You know, what really struck me going back through this was, like you said, she wasn't just pointing fingers. She researched and proposed real alternatives like integrated pest management, using biological controls, being smarter about application. It wasn't just doom and gloom. It was science, plus this almost poetic moral clarity, offering a different path.
Absolutely. And for me, the biggest takeaway, the one that echoes down the decades, is just how inseparable human health is from the health of the environment. Protecting nature isn't some abstract ideal. It's fundamentally about protecting ourselves. It's enlightened self-interest. And that requires constant vigilance, you know, upholding scientific integrity, demanding transparency, pushing back against purely profit-driven decisions that ignore the long-term costs.
So a final thought for everyone listening. Silent Spring really marked a shift, didn't it? From seeing nature as this thing to be conquered, dominated, towards seeing it as something we are part of, something we have to coexist with.
Exactly. So the question for us now is, how do we take that fundamental ethical shift and really apply it to the huge challenges we face today?
Mm.
Climate change, biodiversity loss, managing powerful new technologies. How do we live out that wisdom Carson shared?
A powerful question to ponder.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.